Hello, out there. This is Aaron with Rev Sunday Family. Thanks for chiming in, churning on, whatever. I was thinking about a title. So things kind of started to formulate, and what I want to talk about is stems a little bit off of what Josh talked about, but the connection will come kind of midway. But I was thinking about a title, right? I don't always feel like I need a title, like talks or whatever. But I remember a few Sundays ago I taught, and I was talking about Jesus saying, he says, I am the bread of life, right? And Nikki asked, who is not feeling well right now, so we'll pray for her a little later. Nikki asked a question. She's, that doesn't make sense to me. I love the questions of like the things that we just kind of say, right? We say that all the time, like Jesus is the bread of life. Maybe we don't say that all the time, but like it's language in our culture a bit, right? She asked the question, and so we had to actually like talk about how to explain it, right? And I feel like, so what I'm going to talk about kind of deals with that in another respect, but what I feel like God was showing me, he says, okay, so here's the question. You guys ever heard of like, you are what you eat?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't look that. You're smarter than me. If I've heard it, you've heard of it. You are what you eat, right? So, and we know this, like when we're like on a bad train of like meals and we go to McDonald's for weeks at a time, we turn into like a Big Mac. I'm not looking at anybody in particular. I'm saying like, you know, it's true. What we are, what we eat, really, like, right? And we can encourage our body to eat better things. Like if you go to the gym, your body starts to crave, one, more water, which your body needs anyways. It starts to crave better foods, right? We can encourage hunger to be healthy. In other words, we actually have a say in it. But we are what we eat. So physically, that makes sense. The spiritual aspect of that is like Jesus says, I am the bread of life, right? So if we eat, if we go to Jesus and we kind of spiritually speaking, right, consume of Jesus, we become like Jesus. And then I was like way hungry this morning while Josh was talking, and I, truth bar, right? See, a little object lesson. Right? We are what we eat. I feel pretty good about that. That's all. So the title is "We Are What We Eat," right? Last week, Josh talked about the table. We've talked about the table and from different perspectives, and it was talking about like sometimes we're very divisive, right? I mean, how Sundays are like the most segregated day of the week, which is ridiculous, right? But there's this table that we've talked about, right? We do it. When we have bread and we have juice, we do it when we commune, when we talk, when we worship together. It doesn't all happen on Sundays. It happens way outside of Sundays, right? But the perspective I'm going to take is a little different. I'm going to talk about wisdom today. Okay. So you guys all have some passages, so just kind of be at the ready a little bit. It's not going to be immediate. I think I'm going to read through a couple things. If you want to go there, you can. If it's going to mess you up, you can stay and just where you're at and listen. But I'm going to Proverbs chapter 8. I read a couple little verses to lead up to the chunk that I'm going to read in Proverbs 9. I want to say something about wisdom. In Proverbs, that's Hebrew. The original Bible, the Torah, was written in Hebrew. So the word wisdom is, and I'm probably not saying this right, is chokmah, which equals wisdom, simply, right? But the deeper meaning or definition of that is sacred sense. It's God's wisdom. There is wisdom in the world that is not God's wisdom. So the difference is like God gives his wisdom, and we're going to talk about some of what his wisdom does for us. It's not all about just making good choices. Okay? It's bigger than that. It's deeper than that. And then if you go into the New Testament, I think we've all heard this a couple times, where the Greek word, which is the New Testament, is Sophia, which is really kind of cool because it's a woman's name, Sophia. That's the Greek word for wisdom, and I really love it because in Proverbs, where wisdom is chokma, it's actually the personification of wisdom is a woman. Okay, does that make sense? So you have the first half of the Bible written in Hebrew, and the Greek word is sacred sense. Second half of the Bible, the Greek word is Sophia. But in the first half of the Bible, wisdom is given a woman's personification. In Proverbs, she. It's a she. She's beautiful, and we're supposed to fall in love with her. Okay, so I'm going to read some stuff. Proverbs 8, 10 to 12. Let's see. I'm kind of like hopping in the middle. There's a lot here. I encourage you to read it all. But it says, my wise correction is more valuable than silver or gold. This is wisdom speaking, okay? The finest gold is nothing compared to the revelation knowledge I can impart. Wisdom is so priceless that it exceeds the value of any jewel. Nothing you could wish for can equal her. For I am wisdom, and I am shrewd and intelligent. I have at my disposal living understanding to devise a plan for your life. Shrewd. We probably mess up the definition of shrewd, right? Just sharp, right? You can't trick somebody who's shrewd. Wisdom is shrewd. You cannot trick wisdom. Okay. Proverbs 8:14. You will find true success when you find me, for I have insight into wise plans that are designed just for you. I hold in my hands living understanding, courage, and strength. They're all ready and waiting for you. Who in here wants courage and strength?
Who?
Yeah.
Wisdom actually gives us things like if you go like joy. Let's go to 8:14. You will find true success when you find me. Oh, wait, I already read that. Thank you very much. Going on to 8:32 to 35. I actually need my glasses on. I'm pretending like I don't need these glasses, and I'm like doing the like thing. So, anyways. All right, so Proverbs 8:32 to 35. It says, so listen, my sons and daughters, to everything I tell you, for nothing will bring you more joy than following my ways. Listen to my counsel, for my instruction will enlighten you. You'll be wise not to ignore it. If you wait at wisdom's doorway, longing to hear a word every day, joy will break forth within you as you listen for what I'll say. For the fountain of life pours into you every time that you find me. For the fountain of life pours into you every time you find me. And this is the secret of growing in the delight and the favor of the Lord. If you read, if there's invitation to come and love wisdom, fall in love with wisdom. I think sometimes when we think of like a wise person, we think of this sage on a top of a hill or a mountain, you know what I mean? Like a wise man would be what? Somebody who's got all the answers, maybe? Like a sage, somebody who's like fairly hard to connect with,
old,
yeah, stoic, right? Almost emotionless. I think there's images that we have of what a wise woman or a wise man would look like. The reality is that God's wisdom, when we're wise in God's eyes, we're actually teachable. We're open. We do not have all the answers. God does. As a wise man in God's eyes, I don't have all the answers, right? I go to him who does. That's the difference. The world might believe there are wise people out there, but they can be disconnected from life. They can say a lot of good things, but does life really come out of it? Right? So the passage, so with what you have, I'm going to read through it once, and then I'm going to read again, and we're going to stop, and you're going to read if you have, you know, the numbers on your little scriptures. So this is Proverbs 9, 1 through 6. Sorry, actually, like 1 through 12. 9, 1 through 12. Okay. So I'm going to read through it, like I said, and then we'll go back through. Wisdom has built herself a palace upon seven pillars to keep it secure. She has made ready a banquet feast, and the sacrifice has been killed. She has mingled her wine, and the table is all set. She has sent out her maidens, crying out from the high place, inviting everyone to come and eat until they're full. Whoever wants to know me and receive my wisdom, come and dine at my table and drink of my wine. Lay aside your simple thoughts and leave your past behind. Agree with my ways, live in my truth, and righteousness you will find. If you try to correct an arrogant cynic, expect an angry insult in return. And if you try to confront an evil man, don't be surprised if all you get is a slap in the face. So don't even bother to correct a mocker, for he'll only hate you for it. But go ahead and correct the wise. They'll love you even more. Teach a wise man what is right, and he'll grow even wiser. Instruct the lovers of God, and they'll learn even more. The starting point for acquiring wisdom is to be consumed with awe as you worship God. To receive the revelation of the Holy One, you must come to the One who has living understanding. Wisdom will extend your life, making every year more fruitful than the one before. So far, what is it that wisdom offers? You know what I mean? Joy, courage, strength. It offers next year. You're going to be more fruitful next year than you are this year. Does anybody want that? Does anybody want the next year to be better than the year you're in? No matter how good this year is, right? I think that's, I mean, there's like incredible promise in this. And I and the reality is I think it's important because sometimes we look at wisdom like it's unachievable. How can I gain wisdom? It seems so deep and so like hard to reach and hard to grab, you know? Jesus says, you have not because you ask not. He comes and he teaches a lot of stories that people don't understand. And the reason they don't understand them is they don't go to him to have a conversation. They listen from a distance. And the people that get to understand what Jesus is teaching about are the ones that draw near and ask the questions, right? It's like being honest that, like, I don't know. I don't know, teach me. And then he teaches and you're like, I don't know what that meant. Can you tell me what that meant? And he says, come with me. And then you go for a walk and you get to know the one that teaches you. Oftentimes, like the answers of like, I thought it's kind of like, what's that?
Right in front of you.
Right in front of you. Oftentimes the answers that we want, it's like in class you pass a note. Do you like me? Yes. Check yes or check no. Do you like me? We want yes or no answers, right? For the biggest questions in our lives, we want yes or no answers. The reality is that if you read the Bible, it's poetry. And the one thing poetry often doesn't do is point to yes or no. And the reason being, I believe, is because that God wants us to know him, not just have the answers. Answers are weak. The solution, the Savior, the life giver, that's a different story. When we connect with him, we have the answer to all of life's worries, problems, right? So when you go and it's like, and there's this relationship where like we get to build a relationship with actually wisdom. I think I mentioned this. I'm reading this book. I really love it. It's called The Wisdom Jesus. And it's this perspective on Jesus that gets lost oftentimes in the Western church. There's an Eastern angle to Christianity that we're very unfamiliar with often. But to make it kind of like, I'm still learning, so like I don't want to talk about things I don't really fully understand, even though we're just going to talk about stuff I don't fully understand. But what I'm saying is, there's a point at which Mary calls Jesus Rabboni, Rabbi. Rabboni is ultimate. You are the teacher, right? And around that time, rabbis were the teachers. So if you were a disciple of this rabbi, in other words, he was the one that you would go to for your answers, and you would learn from them. So you, like, oftentimes disciples would live with their rabbis. Like, they would serve them, and they would learn from them. Kind of like these, like, Padawan kind of experiences, right? Like, you would basically surrender everything to learn from this person. And when Jesus comes back, and he appears as the gardener to Mary, and she doesn't recognize who he is. He is risen from the grave, right? She doesn't recognize him because he's been transformed. He's now, like, risen, and for some reason she can't see him. He doesn't look the same to her. And she's like, "Where do you know where he is?" And he looks like the gardener to her or whatever. And Jesus says, "Mary." And the second he says her name, she goes, "Rabboni." Like, her response is like, "Teacher," right? Rabbis fall in line with teachers about Proverbs, like parts of the Bible, wisdom teachers. They're wisdom teachers. So they basically want to equip you to be able to live fruitful lives. What's wisdom for? Strength, courage, that next year will be better than the last. It's all about growing, right? The capacity to love. Fill in the blank. So I want to read through this again because there's a point in history. Everything before it and everything after it points to it is Jesus. The Old Testament all points to Jesus. Everything in the Gospels points back to Jesus. In our lives, we're looking back, right? But there's stuff that came before. And we talk about this table, right? So if you have your numbers, I'm going to read through it again, and we're going to stop, and I want you to read the number that you have, okay? Does this make sense? You guys ready? You have a number?
Number five?
You're number five, okay, so you will be towards the end. So, all right. So,
you have a Bible? No, okay, she said that. I knew you had that, just seeing if she was
ready. No, I would love
to. What number are you in? So right when I'm done, I'll pass you the way. I got you, bro.
All right. So I'm going to read back through Proverbs 1 through roughly 12, I think it was. Yeah. Okay. So Proverbs 9:1. Wisdom has built herself a palace. Who has number one?
Oh. Ready.
All right. Wisdom has built herself a palace. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it.
Ooh. So another, and there's other versions. Jesus is giving Simon a new name. He says, "I give you a new name. I call you Peter. Peter is rock. I call you stone. And on you I will build my church." Right? So there's different versions. I like to, like,
open it. I know, it's an original Loa right here where it says the Greek word for Peter means rock.
It's awesome, right?
In the footnote,
yeah. And this church is not a boring building. This is a living building. This is God's building. We are part of that. We are stones. So when wisdom has built herself a palace, we are part of this palace. Okay? So I love that it's not a dinky house. It's a palace now. Right? It's glorious. I build my church. Sometimes we get used to meeting in little places, little rented shacks, little rented this and that, right? We get used to that, but in reality, we are a palace. Knickknacks and whatnots. Okay, so upon seven pillars to keep it secure, who has number two?
That's me.
All right.
James 3.
Yeah. It's 3:17 to 19. Okay, go ahead and read that. Maybe it didn't go that far. Go ahead. So James 3:17 and 18. Okay.
But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable,
gentle and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace.
Mm. That's actually the seven pillars. There's elements in there. If you count them, there's seven. And so I'm turning there because I always like some of the best ways to understand a word is to read a synonym.
Yes.
Right? That's why there's different versions of the Bible, and I encourage you to read more than one version because it actually helps you understand. But it says, so mine says, but the wisdom from above is always pure, filled with peace, considerate, and teachable. It's filled with love and never displays prejudice or hypocrisy, right? Those go hand in hand in any form. And it always bears the beautiful harvest of righteousness. Good seeds of wisdom's fruit will be planted with peaceful acts by those who cherish making peace. Pretty beautiful things to build a building upon, right? These are not like rules. That's the one thing. Seven pillars, they're not rules. It's built upon holiness, purity, really beautiful, and like beautiful things, right? Seven pillars. She has made ready a banquet feast, and the sacrifice has been killed. She has mingled her wine, and the table's all set. Does that sound like anything? Banquet feast, sacrifice has been killed with wine. Bread and wine. Jesus is a lamb. He's a sacrifice. This points to Jesus. A banquet feast where the sacrifice has been killed, mingled wine, and the table's all set. She has sent out her maidens, crying out from the high place, inviting everyone to come and eat until they're full. There's a parable that Jesus, in Matthew, and I believe there's a version in Luke too. It's called the parable of the wedding feast. And it sounds so similar to this, because Jesus tells this parable where he sends out his messengers, his servants, to invite people, right? And then the people decline. They decline because they're too busy. I got business, I got a farm, I got to do this. And it's the king inviting all the townspeople to arrive for this feast to celebrate his son's upcoming nuptials. They decline it. Too busy, blah, 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 this and that. He sends more servants to say, but the feast is ready. Do you not want to come and feast? And they all came up with excuses, beat up the messengers, killed some of them, right? It's a story of the prophets going to the Israelites to continue to tell them that God wants you to come and feast. But then Jesus says, in the parable, he says, but then the king sends out the servants to the byways, the alleyways, to everybody. All will be invited to my feast. And guess what? That's us. We come into the story with that, right? So this is an invitation to the feast, the same feast that Jesus talks about in the parable, the same feast that he introduces with his disciples around a table, with bread and with wine. The one where he says, I'm the bread of life. Right? Into a new covenant with him. Whoever wants to know me and receive my wisdom, come and dine at my table and drink my wine. Lay aside your foolish or simple thoughts and leave your past behind. Agree with my ways. Live in my truth. I'm going to stop there. Number four. Who's got number four?
You didn't want me to read three.
What happened?
I skipped it. You just told the story.
Cool.
It's good. It's good.
I didn't write a number by it. I messed myself up.
It's totally good. I should jump in, you're like, be ready.
Mess it up the story?
No, you got the story. That's good.
Okay. That was an accident. You guys, we all make mistakes, okay? All right. So we skipped number three. Thanks, Josh.
You're welcome.
All right. Who has number four? I'm going to read, agree with my ways, live in my truth. Number four, and go, Megan.
It's Isaiah 55:8-9.
Yes.
For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heaviness, For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts.
So I'll tell you how I've read that passage before, and it's like this guttural feeling, right? And it comes from like places of insecurity, where you read it and you go, oh, God's just proven that he's better than me and he's higher than me. And this is not what he's saying. He's saying, like, if you choose a way and a path without me, it will be lower than my ways. You will not reap the same fruit. You will not have, next year will not be better than the last. Even though you may assume wealth on earth, will you really build and grow? Right? He invites us into what he knows, what he understands. There's not this wall. He's not holding back from us. He's inviting us to know. So it says, agree with my ways, right? His ways are higher than our ways. Live in my truth. I love that Jesus says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And righteousness you will find. Who has number 5?
Hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied.
It's pretty cool, right? What is something that is kind of like this common theme? If we want something, what do we need to be for it? If I want this bar, what do I need to be to eat it?
Hungry.
What's that?
I'm just gonna have to open the package.
Open the package. Do it. Open it up. If I want to want truth, I need to make myself hungry for it. If I want to want wisdom, I need to make myself hungry for it. If I want to next year to bear more fruit in my life, I need to want to be hungry.
And get planted.
Well, yeah. You want to be hungry, right? For wisdom, what we're talking about right now. But I love the personification of wisdom is Sophia. It's a woman, right? The reality is that it's also Jesus. It's the Christ active before Jesus came. That's another story for another time, probably. But if you correct, and then it goes on to say, if you correct an arrogant cynic, expect an angry insult in return. And if you try to confront an evil man, don't be surprised if all you get is a slap in the face. So don't even bother to correct a mocker, for he'll only hate you for it. But go ahead and correct the wise. They'll love you even more. Teach a wise man what is right, and he will grow even wiser. Instruct the lovers of God, and they'll learn even more. What's the markation of being wise? Somebody who's correctable. Somebody who's teachable. So it's like if you're hungry, if you show up and you're all, I'm hungry, you don't fall into the arrogant cynic. You're not the evil dude. You're not the mocker. You're not the dude standing back, slinging insults, right? It's like, it doesn't take a lot to be on the side of wisdom. It just takes humility. The starting point for acquiring wisdom is to be consumed with awe as you worship God. I love that that's where it starts. Something that I find is really beautiful in James. I originally thought I was going to read from James, and I think that I would like to at a later time. But James is known as a wisdom letter. And for those of you who don't know much about James, one thing, it almost did not make it into the canonized version of the Bible. The reason being is because I don't think people understood it. They thought it was judgmental. If you read James, it's the same book that says, you show me your faith by what you say, I'll show you my faith by what I do. In other words, it's the small book in the Bible that says faith without actions is dead. And people read that and they go, you don't know how I feel inside, right? How can you say that? Because Paul talks about a faith that is like unseen and like starts in the heart and like things, right? It's because James is a wisdom book. It's meant to challenge you. Wisdom is not supposed to be, what's wrong?
Nothing.
Everything, nothing. Wisdom's meant to challenge us. It's actually meant to offend us. Is that kind of weird? Here's why. If I believe something that is wrong, and yet I want to know the truth, I should probably be offended with what I believe is wrong, right? Sorry, wrong finger went up. Right? Let's try it again. Right? If I want to know the truth, but I believe things that are wrong, wisdom must offend what I believe is wrong so that I can get to the truth. In other words, James is written to people that are hungry for the truth. So if you read James and you're offended and you say that shouldn't be in the Bible because it's confronting me, we need to check. Are we disciples? Right? Am I following Jesus? Am I willing to be corrected? Because God is not hitting us over the head with anything. So, anyways, if you read James, read it from that perspective of, I'm actually supposed to be offended somewhere in here. Because if I believe something that's wrong, it should point it out. And then I get to know how to actually step into life in that area of my life. I think James 1, 5 through 8. I'm going to read that. And then if anyone longs to be wise, ask God for wisdom and he will give it. He won't see your lack of wisdom as an opportunity to scold you over your failures, but he will overwhelm your failures with his generous grace. God is not going to like scold you for showing up and being like, I didn't know. Can you show me? His grace is all about that. He's like, come to me, learn from me. Jesus talks about that. He says, those of you that are weary and burdened, come to me. I will give you rest. Put your yoke, my yoke upon you, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. It's such a beautiful picture because people are weighted down by the law. And some of the rabbis are just like layers upon layers of rules and stuff. And so when he says this, other disciples of other rabbis are watching and going, he's kind. I want to follow that one. Got it. So I'm going to read that again because this is the accessibility of wisdom. This is the accessibility of God. If anyone longs to be wise, ask God for wisdom and he will give it. He won't see your lack of wisdom as an opportunity to scold you over your failures, but he will overwhelm your failures with his generous grace. That's pretty good. God's pretty good, you know. There's also, I hand you, Meg, what did you read? 5:6? 5:6? Also in that sermon that Jesus does, Sermon on the Mount, right? Blessed are the fill in the blank, right? Jesus is talking about like this. This is the stuff that I call you to, and you will be blessed by following it, right? There's one that says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be known as children of God. I want to go back into James. Who had James? Tabitha, that was yours, right? Yes. James? No, you're fine. So there's the part. And let's see, I'll read it. See, it's verse 18, 3:18. Where am I at? You guys, help me out. You guys, geez. Dang, Kate, rude. Tabitha, why don't you read it? Verse 18.
And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace.
Yeah. Them that make peace, right? Peacemakers. I think I mentioned this before, but I think it's very important to make this because I think this is something that our culture has a hard time understanding the difference. Peacekeeper versus peacemaker. It is not the same thing, right? And this is what I mean. Sometimes to make peace, you actually have to enter into some types of conflict. like for me and Josh to become better friends, sometimes when we don't agree, we need to enter in the conversation and actually be okay with a bit of conflict to make peace. We make peace through conflict sometimes, through challenge, through things that are hard. I make peace in being healthy by going to the gym and creating conflict for my muscles and my body. And I create peace for my body. So creating peace is way, way more engaging than keeping peace. Keeping peace is like, shut up, sit down, don't talk unless you're spoken to. That's peace keeping, right? I just keep quiet. That is not what God calls us to. He calls us to making peace. So if you guys need to have a conversation where you need to just tell me how it is, it's okay.
Can I actually read this first part up here?
Yeah.
It's 13.
Yeah.
Down to 18. I just thought this was really cool all together in one go.
Perfect. Go for it. It's awesome.
Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him shew out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace.
Yeah, that's good. Thank you. It shows the other side of it.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, it shows a lot of what you're talking about. You have to create peace, and how we do that is having the wisdom of Christ and God, versus sitting here and being angry at everybody for everything.
For sure. Yeah. The conflict kind of exists already, right? Sometimes the conflict is already in us. The reality is when I talk about conflict, it's not like conflict for conflict's sake, right? And it's definitely not unkind. It's different, right? To be able to have the conversations of like the uncomfortable conversations that like, hey, can we talk? Because I think you may have misunderstood me or I think this, a wide range or whatever that looks like. It's like the conflict already exists. Yeah, that's good. I think that God, like, we kind of, like, are this, like, this, I think sometimes we underestimate ourselves. And God calls us to really powerful things, you know, and powerful things can be in relationship. They can be at work. They can be what it seems like mundane, right? Quote unquote mundane, like everyday life, powerful things, right? But I also believe that God actually is like calling us to step up and out as like disciples and to like learn and grow. And we are. It's what I see. But like, this is a room full of powerful people. And Jesus, like, can you imagine being on the scene and Jesus saying, follow me? He did not say that to everybody in those moments, right? I believe he's saying that to you, to follow him. And it's not a light thing, but the burden's light. We actually carry more joy. We get to have more peace. And he calls us into situations we right now would probably say no to if we allow ourselves to grow into that place of having the strength and courage that wisdom gives, right? The place that what God is calling us to have. Well, I think I'm hearing you say this to me, God. Do you want me to talk to that stranger? I will talk to that stranger. Right now, some of us are like, right? I know that feeling. I know that feeling. God equips. We don't equip. God equips us. What we do is we go to him. We listen. We love him. We worship him. Allow him to dote on us. You know what I mean? Just allow him to love us. Thanks for listening, everybody.